Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Encanto, House of Gucci, A Boy Called Christmas, The Humans, and Hawkeye. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring a look back at Blazing Saddles. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Thanks to Ridley Scott, there is now a huge argument going on because he was on Mark Maron's WTF podcast, and they were talking about his film, The Last Duel, and it did not do well. It got really good reviews, but it did not do well in the movie theaters. And, you know, everyone's like, well, it got great reviews. Why did it not do well? Never in the history of cinema can you draw an exact direct comparison between the reviews of a film and the success of a movie. That oftentimes doesn't correlate at all. And there are plenty of movies that get terrible reviews and do spectacular. I mean, take a look at Carnage right now, the Venom movie. The reviews are in the toilet, but that movie is one of the highest grossing movies of the year. So, of course, everybody always asks the director, and I don't think it's for the director to decide, because obviously, in most cases, the director thinks they put together a good movie. And everyone's like, but it had Matt Damon, and it had Ben Affleck, and it had Adam Driver, and, you know, oh my God, but why didn't it do well? Ridley Scott has had these big successes in the past, like Gladiator, for example, which is a big sword and sandal film. But they forget that he didn't have movies like Kingdom of Heaven, which kind of flopped. But, I mean, Ridley Scott's career has been a minefield of movies that do very, very well and are greatly remembered, like Alien or Blade Runner, or even more recently, The Martian. But he also has tons and tons of movies that flop and go nowhere, like A Good Year and that Robin Hood movie he made several years ago. So this is nothing new for Ridley Scott. But they asked him, and his response was basically using expletives, complained about millennials and their cell phones. And he says, what we've got today are audiences who are brought up on these effing cell phones. The millennials don't want to be able to be taught anything unless it's on a cell phone. And then he takes a jab at Facebook and says it's a broad stroke, and that's what we're dealing with Facebook, with misdirection and that kind of loss of information to a generation. And there's so much going wrong with what he said. And this, of course, caused a big furor on film Twitter, because people are like, well, why did The Last Duel flop? And they got a bunch of think pieces about it. And then people are saying, well, is it because it's about sexual assault? And yes and no. You can go back and listen to what I said about this. And I'm like, look, this movie is not going to do well, because while it's an interesting political and historic movie, there's a lot of problems with the presentation of it. Part of it is it's about this woman trying to get a voice in, what, like 14th century France. And of course she doesn't get a voice because she's a woman in 14th century France. And it then becomes a movie about male ego and them fighting over it. So it's not even about her. And on top of it, yes, it's got sexual assault, but it's not just that. You got to sit through the scene twice because it's told from three different points of view. Maybe that's why the movie didn't do well, because I remember talking about it and I said, well, here's the thing. It's a good movie. It's well done, but it has the scene in it and you got to watch it twice. And most people don't like to watch those scenes anyways. Rarely do movies with those kind of scenes, the prolonged scenes. I'm not talking about the subject matter, but the prolonged scenes. Usually those movies tend to suffer at the box office because people don't really like to watch those. And it is okay to be uncomfortable and not want to watch a scene like that, whatever the context. That doesn't mean that the movie is endorsing it, but it also means that people don't necessarily want to go on a date on a Saturday night and watch that. So the fact that you asked an 83-year-old director why his movie didn't do well, and he lashes out at millennials? Millennials of all people? The people who didn't go see this movie was his target audience, and part of that's because we're in the middle of a pandemic, and the people that would like that, which are like the over-50 crowd who like the historical stuff, they're staying home. Doggone their avocado toast and craft beer. How dare they not see my movie? And then he yells about Facebook, and I'm like, isn't it your generation, the people in their 60s and 70s and 80s, who are reading all the misinformation on Facebook and taking it as real? I mean, yeah, that's, there's no discrimination in terms of your age in being stupid like that, but my God. The other things I just want to hit really quickly on the box office is Ghostbusters Afterlife exceeded expectations, did spectacular once again. There are all these people that are going, well, we don't know how well it's going to do because it got some middling reviews. Well, because some of the critics were grumpy about it and were still grumpy about the gender politics that were involved with the 2016 version. And so they tried to stick the screws to them. And plus, there's a big backlash against nostalgia now, which is stupid because nostalgia has always been around and it's always fueled entertainment and movies. So yeah, Ghostbusters Afterlife did $44 million, which is almost twice what they were predicting. And then King Richard, which is the beloved, well-reviewed movie, only made $5.4 million. It didn't even make its $10 million that they were thinking it was going to make because it's got Will Smith behind it. So yeah, you still have an older generation that is either not comfortable going back to the theaters or just doesn't want to bother and will wait till it comes to streaming because you got King Richard going straight to your home. And if you want to watch Ghostbusters and you're over 50, you can wait 6 weeks and watch Ghostbusters at home. You don't have to see it right away. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first movie I want to talk about is Mother Android. This is coming to Hulu on December 17th, and it stars Chloe Grace Moretz as a woman trying to save her unborn child from the android apocalypse.
In a perfect world, none of this ever would have happened. Androids were a part of our everyday life.
Hot chocolate, sir.
And then one night, everything changed. We've got to get to Boston before I give birth. It's the only safe place.
How long would that take?
2 weeks. If you can find a safe way for us to go, I'll go.
My biggest reservation about this movie is that it's going to be one of those too pragmatic, we're just going to follow the two people as they're running away. There's a trend in movies that was started with Gareth Edwards' Monsters several years ago, and he carried it on into the Godzilla movie he did, where it's all, we just want to talk about the human drama, and anything supernatural or cool is only going to happen on the periphery. And that's my worry about this one, that they're not going to actually deal with the freaking androids in this movie. It's just going to be them flopping around the wilderness trying to avoid the androids. And I get there's a certain kitsch to that, but you know, if you're going to have a story about killer androids, you better have some killer androids in that movie. It's coming out in mid-December, so you know it's not going for awards, but it'll be a nice little blip in the middle of this wash of movies coming out. The next one I want to talk about is Marry Me, which stars Jennifer Lopez and Owen Wilson in theaters on Valentine's Day weekend.
They say if you want something different, you have to do something different. Yes, I'll marry you. You.
Do you, some guy, take Kat to be your lawfully wedded wife?
Okay. That was crazy.
Kat Valdez left the guy from the concert, then also married her Uber driver.
It's an insane situation. I say we offer $5,000 and let it all blow over.
Or I could stay married to him.
Huh? You know, it used to be you could count on Jennifer Lopez to give a really terrible movie at the beginning of the year. Whether it was Parker or The Boy Next Door. And she's back doing a crappy movie. This movie looks absolutely terrible. It's rare for me to see a movie from the trailer stage and say this thing looks like it's just going to be god-awful. But this thing looks like it's going to be god-awful. And I am terrified to see this movie because it looks so bad. Because part of it, you're like, oh, they're going to get married. Well, that's good because Jennifer Lopez is doggone near menopausal age, so you don't have to worry about getting her pregnant. Oh my, was that politically incorrect? Did I offend anybody on that? But my God, this is a movie where you'd have it happen to a pop star in her 20s or 30s, not somebody who's in her 50s. So this looks like it was manufactured way too late in both Owen Wilson and Jennifer Lopez's career. I know, I am getting in all sorts of trouble this week. Just wait, I got more to talk about. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Encanto and the Humans.
Damn.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the new movie reviews and talk about Encanto. In a close-knit family in Colombia, each child gets a special magical gift, except for one girl who must step up to the challenge to stop the magic from disappearing.
Many years ago, this candle blessed our family with a miracle. In time, every member of our family,
Cecilia, up top,
was given their own magical gift.
Why am I the only one that didn't get a gift?
You're just as special as anyone else in this family.
The magic is in danger.
We gotta get out of here!
We must protect our home. We must protect our family.
This is from Disney Animation, which did movies like, most recently, Raya and the Last Dragon, and they did Moana, Frozen, Tangled, Zootopia, basically what originated with the stink and paint animation all the way back to Snow White and then throughout the years. And Disney in particular is trying to reach out and broaden its wings sort of ethnically. And they have a history of doing this too, by the way, going all the way back to the 50s and 60s with an outreach to South and Latin America and Mexico back when they were doing movies like The Three Caballeros and Saludos Amigos and stuff like that. This is classic Disney stuff. The story concept is kind of out there. I mean, the whole thing is it's about this grandmother, the abuela, who is the matriarch of the family, and her husband had fled violence in Colombia, and she's left alone with her triplets, and she basically makes her own place to live in this. She has this magical candle that creates this house that's alive, and moves around and sort of this protected area that has this village, and so she raises this family for multiple generations. And the magic in there is starting to disappear, and the one girl who's the main character is the only one who's really noticing that the magic is falling apart. And that's really tough to sort of sell in a trailer. I mean, it's high concept, but it's not weird high concept. Like, Pixar does these weird high concept movies like Inside Out or even Soul. Those movies where they're really almost metaphysical, but those are so far out there, you kind of start at that point. This one just seems like, oh, it's just this family that sings and has fun in Colombia. But the story is they're just trying to save the magic. So it's really hard to encapsulate into a sort of that elevator pitch. But I thought that's what kind of made the movie work because it was very self-contained. It's about this family and it doesn't really go beyond that. And that's okay because the threat doesn't have to be the end of the world. Not every movie, and I've been saying this about superhero movie, not every single movie has to be about the destruction of the world as we know it. We don't have to wipe out an entire city for a movie. And that's what's sort of nice about this little Encanto. I mean, there's real danger for this family that's losing the magic of their lifestyle and their heritage and their home. And I mean, there's a lot of, obviously, layers you can see with that. But it really is just self-contained in this little valley. It's just about this family. And it's vibrant and colorful. And that's one of the things that I love about this movie is the color palette. They put so much work into making it beautifully presented. And one of the trends I'm seeing a lot in Hollywood, and we'll talk about this next segment when we talk about House of Gucci, there's this push to having everything just be drab and monochromatic, and it's all shades of gray, which is supposed to make it look mature and realistic, and it doesn't. It just makes it look crappy. And this one swings in the totally opposite direction, and it's bright and colorful and vibrant, and that's what I want to see. If I'm going to go watch a movie that utilizes the entire spectrum of the infinite colors on a movie screen or your TV screen at home. And that makes this movie beautiful. And the characters are sweet. And the girl in it is a great character. And they have the songs in it are done by Lin-Manuel Miranda, which he's getting a little overexposed now. I think this is about the 17th Lin-Manuel Miranda movie we've seen this year. And his stuff's unique and fun, but too much of it is too much, you know. And everybody's trying to put his stuff into movies. And this one doesn't overdo it. You do run into the problems that he has with his music because the stuff is delivered so fast and the lines are so fast, sometimes it's hard to discern what they're saying. And so when they're giving exposition in a song, you sometimes want to rewind it or have the subtitles on. But that's a minor complaint. I mean, I think it's a sweet movie. Stephanie Beatrice, who's best known for playing Rosa Diaz on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, she does the voice of the main girl. And the girl does not look like her. And the girl's kind of awkward, and she's kind of stout, and she's not your typical Disney princess with the angular features. You know, she's got a round face, she's got a big nose. She's adorable in it, but she's not your typical Disney princess beauty, and I like that. I like the fact that they're going outside the realm of Aurora from Sleeping Beauty and Belle from Beauty and the Beast. So this is a fun movie. It's sweet. I liked it way more than I thought I would, and it's vibrant, and it's colorful, and it's a big adventure, and it's bigger than you think it's going to be. So I'm going to have to say Encanto totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the humans. A family helps their daughter and boyfriend move into a new apartment in New York City on Thanksgiving, and family drama is unleashed.
To the Blake family Thanksgiving.
To the very special Chinatown edition of the Blake family Thanksgiving.
Dad, you won't get any reception up here. You have to lean up against the window.
So, are you balancing a job with all your studies?
The main reason I'm not done with school yet is because I was depressed for a bit. I'm fine now.
In our family, we don't have that kind of depression.
Dad. No, we just have a lot of stoic sadness.
I have a bone to pick with this movie. Not the movie, but the way it's being sold. It was sent to me in a press release of saying, hey, would you like to cover this movie? And it's like being shown at like the Nightmares Film Festival. And if you read the production notes, it gives it the sense that there's something malevolent and mysterious behind it. And that it's not it. It's basically just a family having their ups and downs in a very awkward situation at Thanksgiving. And I know people will be like, well, horror can come in all different states. It's not a horror movie. It's not even a thriller. Yes, it's dealing with stuff that's uncomfortable because you have the parents who are older and they've got their issues and they're dealing with the grandmother who's got dementia and she's in a wheelchair and she's a wander risk. And then the two sisters each have their own issues and they have their ups and downs and they snipe at each other and they take jabs at each other. But it's really just a family that fights. I mean, it's the kind of movie about a very dysfunctional Thanksgiving where it's also not a grand Thanksgiving celebration because they're eating on card tables and folding chairs because they just moved in that day. So it's meant to dissect the toxic relationships you can have in a family that will also continue to endear. I mean, there's a lot of truth in the movie in the sense that you could be really upset at your family, your parents or your sister or whatever, and you still love them and you can walk away and calm down. And not every issue that gets brought up and becomes a fight at Thanksgiving is going to turn into something that's destroying the family and tearing it apart from inside, because that's what families do. Trust me. If you haven't experienced enough infighting in the family, then you don't know what a family really is, because that's how families are. And especially when you get together, people who no longer live together, like my family, this is my wife and my kids, we're going to annoy them more once they move out. Now they just deal with the fact that they live here. And then when you all get back under the same roof, yes, you're going to snipe and fight. And it's got some very good performances. Richard Jenkins does a great job as the father who's conflicted. And Amy Schumer's in it. And it's a kind of a smaller part for her and very divergent from what she's done in the past. It's not this broad comedy. But if you want to watch a family that is going to have a less fun time at Thanksgiving than you will this week, then you can check this one out. But I'm still going to have to say it kind of sucks because it just wasn't my cup of tea.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about House of Gucci and A Boy Called Christmas.
I'm too sexy for my shirt. Too sexy for my shirt. So sexy it hurts.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into some more movies and talk about House of Gucci. Lady Gaga and Adam Driver star as married members of the Gucci family, wrestling control of the powerful fashion company.
It was a name that sounded so sweet, so seductive. Synonymous with words, style, power. But that name was a curse too.
I've been the Gucci all my life.
Your name is in the history books.
Paolo, you are Gucci. You need to dress the part.
I have such a conflicting response to this movie. On one hand, there's some very good performances. Lady Gaga is fantastic in this movie. I don't know if she's going to get nominated. I mean, it's a little early to be handing out awards right now, but Lady Gaga is definitely going to be noticed. She's going to be the thing people are going to take away from this movie. And Adam Driver does a really good job in this movie as well. His part is not as big, and it doesn't steal the spotlight as much. I mean, a lot of times he's such a big presence in the movie. Just physically, he's a big presence, but he's also a grand actor. It's hard for him to kind of be subtle in the background. That's not the normal way Adam Driver acts. And especially with him showing up in so many movies lately, usually you put him center stage, and he does sort of play second fiddle to Lady Gaga, and good for him. I think that's very generous of him. I don't think he overdoes his part, and he reins it in, which is good because it serves her very, very well, and she's going to be the one that's going to be finally remembered from this movie. And it's frustrating because you watch this movie and I don't think they put a light on any of the main characters. And that's one of my problems with The Last Duel that Ridley Scott directed earlier this year, is every single shot is in shadows. You're sitting there and they have like a beautiful background. You can see all the stuff and it's nicely lit in the background, but they got people having long conversations in room and they don't have a light on. And I don't understand this with cinematography. Everyone's talking about the theatrical experience and how we need to bring that back and how we need to, you know, focus on how great it is to see the things on the big screen. And you watch it on the big screen and it looks like crap because it's this washed out gray. And I mean, this is a movie about fashion and about look and style. And they don't have any in this movie. It's just, it all looks like almost a black and white film. And as good as Lady Gaga and Adam Driver do in the movie, you got it balanced out with some pretty ridiculous performances. Al Pacino plays one of the Gucci members. I don't even care who. That's the other thing. You know, before I talk about those performances, I don't care who is who in this movie. I'm getting so tired of movies about the idle rich and their problems. Who cares? I'm so tired of these movies where it's like, oh, isn't it tough being super wealthy and leader of this huge corporation? And I just have so much money and it's such a struggle. I don't care. I can't muster any sympathy for anyone in the Gucci family watching this film because they're so extravagant and they're not even like fun, over the top extravagant. They're all just a bunch of a-holes, really. So I have no connection to it. I didn't even really follow this news story when it was out in the 90s because I'm just like, meh. I mean, I'm not, you know what I'm talking about if you know the story behind the movie. This is Crazy Rich Italians, not Crazy Rich Asians, Crazy Rich Italians. That's basically what this movie is. Only instead of crazy rich, crazy is not a descriptor of being rich. Crazy is a descriptor of the people. They're all crazy and they're all rich and they're all Italian. And then you've got characters like Al Pacino plays one of the Gucci members. And he's basically just Al Pacino barely doing an Italian accent. It's sort of like the Al Pacino version of an Italian accent. It's always fun to watch Al Pacino in a movie, especially when he's a supporting role. But then you've got Jared Leto, who, of course, everyone's like, ooh, transformative performance. Well, he just has a lot of makeup on and makes him look like a fat plumber, you know what I mean? And then his accent is so ridiculous. He walks around like, it's like they went and they got Nintendo to do their version of an Italian character for this and then CGI'd him in there. Hey, it's a me. I'm a Jared Leto playing a Mario. Yahoo! And I mean, it's so slathery. It's like they sat there and they went to some stand-up comic from the 50s and said, give me the most racist, over-the-top Italian stereotype. Perfect. I'm going to put that in this movie. So it's this weird mixed bag, no pun intended. It's this weird mixed bag of a bunch of bizarre performances. And the other thing is it's like 2 hours and 45 minutes. There's no reason for this movie to be 3 hours. There are some, like, even like No Time to Die, which is long. And I don't feel like that movie was excessive because it was trying to cram so much in there. It was like trying to do three movies at once. But there's no reason for House of Gucci to be as long as it was. It could have been an hour. It could have been 2 hours capped. At a certain point, I get to award season. I'm so tired of watching the same crappy cinematography over same innocuous, stupid people who I don't care about. I just lose patience. I probably wouldn't have been this hard on House of Gucci if I saw it a couple weeks ago. But I mean, they're cramming in. Oh, you gotta see it. You gotta see it. But you can only see it 2 days before it opens. And so I'm cramming it into a ridiculous schedule of screenings. And I gotta waste 3 hours watching this movie that's just eh. So I'm going to have to say House of Gucci kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about A Boy Called Christmas. The origin story of Father Christmas is recounted by a great aunt to some troubled children on Christmas Eve.
The universe is made of stories. Where anything and everything can happen. Long ago, nobody knew about Christmas. Until a boy showed the world how to believe in the impossible.
We are ready to start the Christmas movies. I know last week I talked about Home Sweet Home Alone, which of course is a Christmas movie. And pretty much any time after Halloween is fair game to start releasing Christmas movies. In fact, in the past, when we'd have just like screenings every week, it was not uncommon for me to have to go see a screening for a Christmas movie that came out that first weekend of November to see that actually right before Halloween or on Halloween. So that's kind of odd. But A Boy Called Christmas is on Netflix, and it is based on a book that's telling, of course, the origin story of Father Christmas. And we've seen tons and tons and tons of these movies, everything from Santa Claus Conquers the Martians on. And this one goes back to sort of like the Finnish history and the Northern European legends that surrounded St. Nicholas. And it tells the story of this kid who, you know, is Nicholas, as he, how he gets his magic and how he ends up getting to know the elves and how he becomes the spirit of Christmas. And they're, of course, trying to attach it to the Christmas Chronicles, which is the ones with Kurt Russell playing Santa Claus. It's a Christmassy movie, but it's very different than that because it has this sort of almost a little bit of a European flair to it. Kind of like how, what was that movie with the postman, Klaus, from a couple years ago, which is another Netflix movie. It's nice to have that sort of European flair to a Christmas movie because that's where Saint Nick comes from. And it's not telling the exact story of Saint Nick, but it's telling the story of Santa Claus and how he comes to be and, you know, where he gets his magic from and how he ends up interacting with the world and where he gets and why the reindeer fly and who the elves are and the history with the elves. And honestly, it's a sweet movie. It's also got a great cast. Maggie Smith plays the aunt who's telling the story to her grandniece and nephews. And you've got Stephen Merchant, who plays he's a mouse. He basically does a voice of a mouse as a friend of Nicholas. You've got Sally Hawkins as a marginal villain in this movie, and she's fantastic. She's fantastic in everything she does. You've got Toby Jones playing an elf. You have these characters these actors that I personally love, Hawkins and Jones and Merchant, and they're in this movie. It's directed by Gil Kean, who did Monster House, and he's done other things that weren't so good, but he does how to do family films, and this is a sweet movie. It's a great little Christmas movie. I don't think it's going to be remembered as one of the greatest Christmas movies of all time, but it is the kind of movie that's very sweet and warm, and it feels like Christmas, it feels like hot cocoa, and it's the kind that I think the whole family can enjoy, and you can watch it in the warmth and pleasure of your own home. So I'm going to say A Boy Called Christmas totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Hawkeye and the Home Cinema Roundup, featuring a look back at Blazing Saddles.
A Blazing Saddle.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the new film reviews with the TV series review. And that is Hawkeye on the Disney Plus service. Jeremy Renner stars in this story of his character's reconciliation with a dark turn during the blip and a new unwanted protege played by Hailee Steinfeld, who keeps putting herself in danger.
Authorities are wondering if the masked vigilante who terrorized the city's underworld is back.
The past is caught up with me.
Should we be worried?
No, it's nothing. I'll be home for Christmas.
When I wore this suit, I made a whole lot of enemies.
You're Hawkeye!
Who the hell are you?
Some people have actually called me the world's greatest archer.
Are you one of those people?
Look, if you go back to the fact that the Marvel Cinematic Universe is based on essentially serialized stories, so a limited series of 1 hour episodes or 45 minute episodes, they kind of work. And certainly Hawkeye, which is more in line with the Falcon and the Winter Soldier TV series, I'm not going to say it's more realistic because you still have impossible things from a superhero perspective. But at the very least, you know, like Clint Barton, the character of Hawkeye, he's just a guy who can shoot arrows really, really well, as opposed to an alien space god or somebody who's messing with the fabric of space and time. So this one feels a little more, quote unquote, down to earth. But it's time for Christmas because it takes place right before Christmas, and it's going to lead up. Every episode drops each week, and I think the last one drops right before Christmas, something like the 22nd. And the first two episodes are available now, and it really doesn't even focus as much on Clint Barton's character, which is Hawkeye, but it's Hailee Steinfeld's character, who's basically this college girl who has always looked up to Hawkeye and become a great archer in her own right. And it's her sort of wanting to become a superhero. And he's trying to keep her safe, but also get rid of her because he doesn't want to deal with her anymore because he's got his own troubles and his own family. The series is her story, and it's about her development, which she's great. I've always liked Hailee Steinfeld, all the way going back to True Grit when she first really showed up. And she is beautiful, and she's formidable, and she can do the action, but she's also very vulnerable. I think she's a great presence on screen. And she works really well with Jeremy Renner. And Jeremy Renner, his character of Hawkeye, you know, he doesn't want the fame, he doesn't want the notoriety, he just wants to get in and take his kids home kind of thing. And that's the reluctance of being pulled back to do a job you're not always wanting to do, but you feel the need to do. And you get a lot of that with the Hawkeye series, and they're setting some things up that are going to be seen in the later movies, but you don't really know exactly what's happening with the bad guy yet. You don't have the outside threat yet, but it'll develop because right now you've got Hailee Steinfeld discovering things, and of course, the character of Hawkeye trying to track all this down. It works. It absolutely works. It's got all the elements that you'd expect from a Marvel series. It's got the humor. It's got the tongue-in-cheek nature. So it's a lot of fun. I enjoy it, and I'm looking forward to more of these. As we talked about last week, we got a whole bunch of these TV series coming to Disney Plus, and that's what's going to retain their subscribers. So I'm looking forward to it. Hawkeye totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week, I want to go back into the vault and look at Blazing Saddles from 1974. The reason I'm talking about this is because I was having a conversation on the air with a host, and she mentioned something, and this is nothing against her because I've heard this from a lot of people, including Mel Brooks, saying, oh, you couldn't make Blazing Saddles today. Mel Brooks came out and said that a couple years ago when he was promoting the Young Frankenstein stage musical. And he was like, that's political correctness and cancel culture, you know. And I've heard that from a lot of people. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go back and watch Blazing Saddles. I'm not just going to go on what I remember. Let's go check it out. So I watched it this week. It wasn't hard to do because it's one of my favorite comedies of all time. Mel Brooks' seminal spoof of Westerns and satire of American racism finds a black sheriff put in charge of a small Western town.
Torn from the fiery pages of the mightiest annals of the West comes the supreme saga in the great tradition of frontier drama.
He rode a blazing saddle. He wore a shining star.
The heroic sheriff rallies his citizens in the wildest finish the West has ever seen, or the movies have ever shown.
Oh, ow! Have you ever seen such cruelty?
This is a funny, funny movie. And in fact, I mean, take all the stuff that's that would be otherwise offensive, you know, the racial humor and the sex jokes. There's just absurdist humor in here that's hilarious. You know, the pie fight at the end. There's just scenes that I found myself chuckling about that weren't even the dirty stuff. That aren't even like the scandalous stuff. It's just these one-off jokes that I'm like, oh gosh, I forgot about that. And this movie also moves so fast. It's got a real flow to it. I'm just going to say, I absolutely love Blazing Saddles. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
But let's talk about the ultimate question is, could you make it today? And after contemplation, I'm going to say probably not, but not for the reasons you think. I mean, listen, really, we'll talk about the language here in a second. So there's some language issues, but there's no F-bombs in it. There's no nudity, and there's no graphic violence. I don't even know if it would get an R rating anymore. It's all topical and language. And yes, the language would probably put it into R-rated territory, but it's just a barely an R movie now compared to some of the stuff that's out there. But let's look at it. Let's break it down. What do most people talk about with this movie? The prolific use of the N-word. You couldn't use that today. Really? Do you know what movie has the most use of the N-word? I read that this one had, I didn't count them, but I'd read that the N-word is used 38 times in this movie. Django Unchained uses it, I think, 200 times. And that movie came out 5 years ago. So don't lecture me about how the use of the N-word would prohibit this movie from being made today, because they make movies with the N-word all over them today. Most of them are done by Quentin Tarantino. But my point being is that does not preclude it from happening. And to that point, when Mel Brooks was making the movie back in the 70s, he got pushback from the studio then. They wanted him to take out all the racial humor and all the sex humor, and he wisely found a way to keep it in. But he had trouble making it in the 70s. I think he would have trouble doing it. I think he'd struggle getting a big budgeted picture made. But I think the other thing is you make this movie and it would cost $150 million because they put too much money behind it. With the exception of three instances, every single N-word that is dropped is uttered by a villain or one of the podunk town folk. And they end up becoming sympathetic characters, but at the beginning, they're stupid and moronic. And, well, here's a great example. I mean, Mel Brooks shows his hand by explaining why it's okay for these people to say the N-word in this scene with Gene Wilder and Cleavon Little.
What did you expect? Welcome, Sonny. Make yourself at home. Marry my daughter. You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. The common clay of the New West. You know, morons.
This is him saying, hey, look, this is why the people are talking like this. All the good guys, there's three times where somebody uses it. Twice Bart uses it. Once in a response to Lyle in the first scene. And the second time he uses it is when he puts a gun to his head to threaten himself to get away from all the town folk from shooting him. And then the only other time is one of his friends from the railroad, when he sees him again, he uses the term in a very contemporaneous sort of urban slang version. So it's not used by quote-unquote approved characters. They're all idiots. They're all people who need to get better. So I don't think that the N-word would preclude it. I don't think the sex is going to be a problem, because most of the jokes, the sex jokes are all really veiled, and they're all kind of double entendres, and you know they use like foreign languages and stuff like that with Madeline Kahn's character. The reason this wouldn't be able to get made today, or why it wouldn't do well, is it was a spoof of Westerns, which ruled the box office from the 30s to the 60s, and they were a dying breed, and so it was capitalizing on dissecting and deconstructing the Western genre itself. The other reason it would have trouble is simply because it's a Mel Brooks comedy. Mel Brooks stuff is sort of classic of the 60s. It has show tunes. It's like an old Dean Martin stand-up comedy night type thing. And then the offensive jokes in there are actually the jokes about sexual assault, which do not land well, and they shouldn't land well, because it sort of minimizes it and dismisses it as a crime. And then, especially right at the end, there's this wash of gay jokes that go on that, again, don't land as well. But those are the only things that I think would be really problematic. If you watch this and you don't think it's funny, you just didn't get the movie. It's like showing somebody Frankenstein or the original Friday the 13th and have them be like, oh, that wasn't scary because I'm young and I don't think that's, you know, it's really not as politically correct as people think. When you watch it, it's sending up traditional racism. Anyways, that's it for this show. I need to go. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. Happy Turkey Day. Next week when I come back, I'm going to be talking about Silent Night and Come On, Come On. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.